Blog Talk Radio.
I am the God of Hellfire, and I bring you...
there we go. I feel much better with that squeak out of the way. Welcome to Eerie House Radio. I'm Dale Kay from Dale Kay Spook Show here, along with...
Dave Binkley from the Weirdest Really Bad Movie and Spaceship One, and I'm here along with...
Oh, this is CW. I am tonight the girl on fire. I've always wanted to say that.
And she's even accompanied by...
It is I, the ghoul on fire. It is I, God's ghoul, by the way.
I told you not to let him have matches, Dale. Told you not to let him play with matches.
Yeah, that's a blowtorch I hear, actually. Not matches. But...
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, we're not fooling around. We're going for the high, high flammable.
In the old town tonight. Hot time in the old town tonight.
Burning with a hunk-a-hunk-a burning old-time radio tonight with CBS Radio Mystery Theater and a nifty little tale. Maybe even some bonus material. But tonight's story, Ordeal by Fire.
Wonderful story. And finish up our firing squad that we have for the weekend here of all stories about fire. And this isn't arson, but this is... Well, it's a story about fire.
Hey, Dave.
Holding your feet to the fire and things like that.
Ooh.
Was the moderator for this the normal guy?
E.G. Marshall, yes.
Oh, okay. Couldn't remember. Okay.
Boy, boy. We all sit around the cyber campfire and listen to E.G. regale us.
Yes, I haven't had a good regale in a while.
I walk right into that.
And tonight is as good a night as any other, in my opinion. Humble or not.
Go ahead. Your wife isn't listening.
What? I know nothing. I know nothing. Would you see? Anyhow.
But yes.
A thrilling tale. And maybe we'll have a 5-minute mystery today, too, as well.
Ooh. Oh, okay.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Please.
Mm-hmm. And we've got tonight's story with Mandel Kramer, Earl Hammond, Sidney Walker, Guy Sorrell, and Julie Newmar.
Yep. And later on, after the show... You know, which is just 8 Eastern. Oh, something else is going to happen. What could we do with our time?
Honorable Hunter, go to the goal, blatantly.
Period. Yeah, and then their Twitches. Just go to his Facebook page. There'll be a link.
There'll be a link.
Yep.
Yes. This thing kicked off in 1974, didn't it?
No. I mean,
yep.
That...
January, February, March 21st? No.
74, yeah.
74. What did I say?
Not 54. You said 54.
Oh, I said 50. Okay. Yeah. Drugs, I don't know.
I thought you said 24.
I heard 74, but...
Oh,
do
you hear 74? That's a turn up my hearing aid.
Yeah,
I heard 74, 7.
I thought I said, you guys are confusing me, and I doubt my memory anyway.
Eh? Huh? What?
Huh?
Yeah.
I doubt my continuity anyway. You guys aren't helping.
Oh, we're supposed to help? Where is that in my contract?
Yeah, exactly. Put it in a paycheck. We'll see what happens. I got you.
Anyhow, we should probably run along to part one of Ordeal by Fire. And let's get out there. What show number is this one, Dave?
This is episode number 61, again, from March 21st, 1974.
The CBS Radio Mystery Theater presents... Come in. Welcome. I'm E.G. Marshall. Welcome to the world of your own terrifying imagination. Mark Twain once said, "Everyone talks about the weather, but no one does anything about it." The same thing might be said of the state of morality in the world today. Everyone talks about immorality and corruption, but no one seems to do anything about it. Can we do anything about it? This is the story of a group who tried, with results like this.
Oh, no. Please. Please. Help. Oh, my feet. They're on fire. They're burning up. Oh, Prometheus. Promos. Help me. Please. Help me. Stop the burning. I believe. Now. I believe. I...
Our mystery drama, Ordeal by Fire, was written especially for the Mystery Theater by Murray Burnett and stars Mandel Kramer and Julie Newmar. It is sponsored in part by the Kellogg Company, makers of Kellogg's Special K cereal. I'll be back shortly with Act One.
And now another tale of the ball and chain. At Kellogg's Special K
presents Last Tango in Pittsburgh.
Zero. Lounge.
My little orchid, will you tango with me?
With Raoul.
You're a splendid dancer.
Thank you.
But what was that?
I was what?
That sound effect.
Oh, I'm a few pounds overweight, and this ball and chain points out how my extra weight can get in the way.
I'm pointing you back to your chair.
Our heroine decided to lose that extra weight. She exercised and ate smart at every meal, starting with a Special K breakfast. A bowl of Special K skim milk, tomato juice, and coffee. It's less than 240 calories, 99% fat-free, and 100% delicious. After a while, she was rid of the ball and chain and back at Raoul's.
Darling, you're looking fantastic.
What a happy ending.
What an ending. We're just getting started.
Raoul, get lost.
Your happy ending could begin with the Kellogg Special K breakfast.
And that's another tale of the ball and chain.
Not many companies are large enough in the homeowner's field to provide the type of services State Farm provides.
State Farm agent Bob Johnson of Atlanta, Georgia, talks about service on homeowners insurance.
That can be very important, particularly in the event of a catastrophe. And we have had two in Atlanta in the past calendar year. We had a severe ice storm and a series of tornadoes. And in each case, State Farm brought in catastrophe claims crews, and they worked almost around the clock. And in many cases, we were making payments when a lot of people hadn't even been able to contact their insurance carrier.
State Farm Fire and Casualty is number one in homeowners insurance because of low rates and outstanding service. Good reasons to see your nearby State Farm agent now.
And like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Prometheus' gift of fire to man was a blessing, bringing warmth, cheer, enabling man to cook his food, and also protect him from wild beasts. But along with the benefits came drawbacks. Fire proved to be destructive, and sometimes deadly, and man used it often to destroy. Thus was born the warning, don't play with fire. However, those who created one warning didn't follow their own advice, and they inevitably learned that they should have.
Bob! Bob! Over here!
Ava, I wired you not to meet me at the plane.
I had to. Bob, I'm so glad you're here.
Darling.
I've missed you.
Me too, darling.
I know I shouldn't have sent you that silly cable, but, Bob, I am so frightened.
It's all right now. It is all right.
No, no, it isn't. I know how important your China trip was to you, but I had to bring you back. I tried to handle this myself, but it's
handle
just...
what?
Not here. Let's have a cup of coffee and I'll try to explain.
Just don't understand. What's your father afraid of?
I don't know, and he won't tell me. That's why I sent for you, Bob. Maybe he'll talk to you.
You know, darling, if you were anyone else except the level-headed, beautiful girl that I'm going to marry, I'd say this whole thing was nonsense.
You won't say it after you see Dad. You won't recognize him.
Why, you mean he's changed physically?
Not so much in appearance, but in his attitude. You know the way Dad was completely self-assured, positive.
Yes, and sometimes wrong.
Of course, who isn't? But you don't get to be the head of one of the largest corporations in the country by running scared. And, Bob, believe me, Dad's terrified. Can you picture Vern Marcus scared?
What's going on, Vern?
Oh, nothing much, Bob. Just having my study remodeled.
It looks like you're making it into a bank vault. You going to store your money here?
What brings you back to the States? I thought you planned to stay in China 2 months.
You're the reason I'm here, Vern.
You've evidently been allowing Ava to fill your head with a lot of nonsense.
Nonsense?
Well, I don't know what she told you,
but... She didn't tell me that you were turning your study into a fortress or electrifying the fence around the house, but... She told me enough to convince me that I was right to come back. What's frightening you, Vern?
Now, leave me alone. Just leave me be, that's all. Is that too much?
Much too much. Stop thinking about yourself and think of what you're doing to Ava.
Ava has nothing to do with this.
No? How would you feel if your daughter built herself a fortress and locked herself in, turning from an outgoing, beautiful girl to a frightened, petulant child, asking only to be left alone? Would you try to help?
All right, Bob. You win. One promise. You mustn't tell Ava.
But she's frantic with worry. I have to tell her something.
No.
At least let me tell her that you've confided in me. That will help.
That's all you'll tell her? You promise?
I promise.
All right. My telling you isn't going to do any good. I'm caught, that's all.
Caught by what?
The Promethean Society.
What's that?
It's a small secret society dedicated to doing something about the lack of morality in the world today.
All right, but what do you mean you're caught?
I have 1 week to give the leader of the society, a man who calls himself Promos, $1 million.
For what?
Well, ostensibly to spread the message of the society.
Well, what kind of work do they do that takes $1 million?
A public relations campaign. Newspaper advertising, television, radio. There are even discussions of making a motion picture, and that takes money.
Well, I don't see the problem, Vern. If you really feel that this is worthwhile, you make the contribution. If you don't, you tell them you won't go along.
I'm afraid that's not possible.
Oh, come on, Vern. What are they going to do if you say no?
Rather than tell you, I'll show you. Timmy... Bob Steele remembers you. I'm sure you remember him.
Sure. I remember, Bob. How are you?
Well, I'm fine, but what are you doing in the wheelchair?
Learning how to operate the darn thing. I can move it pretty good. It's the brakes that bother me. Oh, watch it.
That's all right. I've got you.
Oh, thanks. Now, Vern, what brings you here?
Well, actually, it was Bob.
Bob? What can I do for you?
Well, Vern seems to be passing the buck. I'm trying to find out what's got him so uptight, and he told me that...
What have you done, Vern? What have you told him?
Well, nothing, yet. You see, Ava cabled me in China because she was so worried, and I came back to try to help.
How much have you told him, Vern?
Well, about our joining the Promethean Society, and that they've asked me for $1 million in contributions, and they asked you for half that, and you didn't pay. Well, Bob wanted to know what happened to you, so I brought him here to show you.
You want to see what happened to me, Bob? Unwrap the blankets around my legs.
What?
Do as he says. And look at his feet.
Good Lord. What happened?
Third-degree burns. The doctor tells me scar tissue will take about 6 months to form.
Oh,
Then I can start to learn to walk again.
How did it happen?
I was here, in my house. One day, my feet just burned up.
Tell him, Timmy. That day was just 2 days after you refused to contribute the $500,000 that Promos had requested.
Ava, darling, get off my back.
Oh, Bob, what's happening to us? Why are we so ugly to each other?
Because something pretty ugly is going on.
And you don't think I'm old enough to be let in on it?
Look, I've already explained to you that I gave your dad my word.
But at least tell me how you're going to help him.
Will you be satisfied with that?
I guess I'll have to be.
All right. You remember me telling you about a buddy of mine in Vietnam?
I think so. His name was Brian.
Yes, Brian Casey. He went from Marine Sniper Scout to the Chemical Warfare Branch, and now he runs a private detective agency. Now, he should be here in 5 minutes. Wish us luck.
I can't do it, Bob. I just can't.
Byrne, think what we're asking. Only to stall.
He'll tell me I've had enough time. I've known about this for weeks.
He's right, Bob.
Look, Casey, I brought you here because I believed you could help. Now, if you're going to agree with him...
Just stalling isn't enough, Bob. We've got to have a plan. And before I can even think of anything, I've got to see what this organization looks like and how it operates.
I've told you, Mr. Casey.
It's not good enough. I have to attend one of those meetings. I just don't believe that any man can control fire.
Then how do you explain what happened to Timmy Burns?
I can't. Yet. And we still can't be sure that Burns told it like it happened.
Well, Timmy has no reason to lie.
And you must believe that this Promos can control fire.
I only know what I saw.
I saw his feet, too.
After whatever happened, happened.
Well, what could have happened, except what Timmy told us?
Well, tell you one thing that could have happened. Two rough gents could have called on Burns, tied him up, gagged him, and roasted his feet.
I saw his feet, Casey. This couldn't have been done with matches.
Bob, you know better than that. Now, think back when we were in Vietnam. Remember the defoliants? Flamethrowers? Now, these guys could have used that on him.
Well, then why wouldn't he tell us?
Because they told him not to. And he sure would listen after they finished with him.
Never thought of that, but it is possible.
No, you don't know Promos.
You think he's a nice guy? You wouldn't stoop to a thing like that?
Well, I don't know what he is. A fanatic or a blackmailer. But there's an aura of power about him and a certainty. I don't know, but I'm sure that he doesn't have to use others. And certainly not thugs like you describe.
Well, that's why I have to meet him and see his operation. That's the only way I can help.
And I don't see what good that'll do.
Let's look at your options, Byrne. One, you can pay.
Just the first in a long string of payments.
Two, you can blow the whistle and go to the district attorney.
With what? Tell him you joined the secret society willingly, that it's dedicated to restoring the moral tone of the world, and that you've been asked for a contribution.
That's why I haven't considered the police.
Or three, you can believe me when I tell you that Casey here is the toughest, most competent, and most highly trained private operative I know, in addition to being a buddy of mine from Vietnam.
I'm not downgrading Casey. I just don't see what he offers.
A long shot. You can take me to your scheduled meeting tomorrow night and introduce me as a sinner who's seen the light. I'm an ex-Marine, a Vietnam veteran. Well, I made a bundle in the black market, and now I want to give some of it to the Promethean Society to make the world a better place. But I want to see before I give. And the reason you don't have the million is that you wanted Promos' approval to allow me to chip in with you.
That makes sense, Vern.
And if Promos doesn't go for it, or I come up with nothing, you can always pay. How you feeling, Vern?
Nervous. Very nervous. I wish Bob could have come.
Relax. Just do it the way we rehearsed it. You were letter perfect.
But what if Promos asks me about...
No. I'll handle the questions if they're about me. Now, clue me in again on the way this affair is run. It'll take your mind off what's worrying you.
Well, the members all gather in the clubroom. Very austere, but comfortable. We generally chat with each other, and then when a gong sounds, we go into the assembly hall. That's a large room.
Uh-huh.
I think it used to be a ballroom. It's been fixed. It has a stage at one end with a platform. That's where Promo stands when he talks.
That all?
Well, there's the fire, but you know about that. At a certain point in his address, he raises his arms and extends them in the white and gold robe. And suddenly, he's consumed by fire. But it never burns him. Never.
And you have no idea where the fire comes from?
None. We've all talked about it. At first, we thought it was some magician's trick, but we can't be sure.
You never had the stage checked out?
Well, we talked about it, but we never did. Here we are. You know, you'll have to meet Promos before you can get into the meeting.
All you have to do is introduce me. The rest will be up to me.
So, you would like to join the Prometheans, Mr. Casey?
Well, that's why I'm here. Now, what's with this bit about taking your shoes off? And...
If and when we accept you, we'll explain our rituals. But we do not allow you into the inner chamber with your shoes on. What do you know about the Prometheans?
Well, only what Vern Marcus told me.
And what was that?
Well, it was pretty general that you were an organization doing something about the shocking philosophy in our contemporary society that anything goes as long as it makes a buck.
Now, why do you feel so strongly about it?
Atonement.
Atonement? For what?
For my sins.
Now, this is not a confessional, and I am not a priest, Mr. Casey. We're engaged in a very secular battle here against the forces that have distorted and corrupted the moral values all over the world. And we intend to use the very same instruments that did the corrupting.
Well, I apologize, but I wasn't being flip. Maybe Vern told you I was in Vietnam in the Marine Corps. I know this isn't a confessional, and you're not interested in my life story, but I made a fortune then.
Opium?
No, not quite that bad. Black market. I sold everything I get my hands on.
Yes. Now, while I'm greatly flattered that you want to join the Promethean Society, I'm sure you're unaware of our admission procedures. Now, we have always selected our members, and only because of Vernon Marcus's stature and the substantial contribution he's making to the Society did I consent to see you this evening.
Now, wait a minute.
Now, much as I sympathize with people like you, you're not the type of member we seek.
You know, up until 5 minutes ago, I thought your organization was doing something, but now I think different.
Now, what do you think now, Mr. Casey?
I think maybe you are money-hungry like I was in Vietnam, and you want to stick Marcus for the million and figure on picking up another $500,000 from me later on.
If that's what you think, Mr. Casey, I'd be delighted if you'd stay for the meeting.
You mean that?
I never say anything I don't mean.
Is made up of believers and non-believers. The two disparate groups argue about anything and everything from the existence of ghosts to the importance of dream research. But few of the arguers ever get down to gritty reality. In just a moment, Brian Casey will see for himself the existence and power of Promethean fire as controlled by Promos when we return with Act Two.
That's right. The harsh reality is, the important thing is, Ernest Borgnine. Somebody's got a police radio going or something.
Yeah. That's someone Ernest on Borgnine. The land. Oh, Rick. Is Ernest Borgnine
on
the goat, land?
Though.
He's on the goat. Okay. All right. The goat.
Where is the goat?
Where's
the goat?
The goat is on
Where's
fire.
The goat?
That's exactly what a goat sounds like when you light it on fire.
That's what I sound like when you light me on fire.
Yes, that's what anyone would sound
here,
like.
Here at Erie House, we do not recommend setting your goats on fire.
Yes, we do frown upon that extremely. You may set your Wilhelms on fire, but
yes.
Not your goats.
Ah! We're not going to get into a shouting match tonight.
Oh.
It's crazy how the Wilhelm scream is still used everywhere.
Absolutely. And there's the Wilhelm scream, there's another scream that is not as famous, but it's called the Howie, H-O-W-I-E, the Howie scream.
Is it Howie Mandel?
The Howie scream?
No, it's called the Howie.
The Howie.
The Howie, you say?
I do. I do say. That's a H, that's a O, that's a W, that's a I, that's a E. And not after Mr. Mandel. Do you see it?
Here in Florida, we have a place called Howie in the hills, and if he yells, nobody pays any attention.
Frequently used as a sound effect for a scream in movies, television, video games, it originates from Howie Long's death scene in the 1996 crime film, Broken Arrow. However, it was first used in the 1980 drama film The Ninth Configuration. That is Howie Long, the former football player.
That was not Howie Long.
That was
no relation to Joe Namath.
No, that was John Matuszak, I think.
Johnny Weissmuller. Variety of tofu. Oh my gosh.
Brandon Fraser, maybe? I don't know.
No. George of the Jungle.
Well, yeah. That'd be a great name. Wine Muller. It's like he's thinking about wine all the time.
It was Weissmuller.
But his friends called him Franz. Yeah, okay.
Yes.
Well, anyway.
They did.
Now, we now know of the, you all now know of the Howie. You have the Wilhelm and you have the Howie. Two of the most famous screams in Hollywood stock usage.
Well, yep. We made mention of George in the Jungle. That was a yell, too. Was that what you were referencing?
Yeah,
no,
sort of.
Kind of. He said George of the Jungle when he did the Tarzan yell. I said, nope, George of the Jungle did not do that one. That's definitely Tarzan. George did something else. I don't know.
Oh, hold it. Wait a second. Somebody say interesting things while I fish something up.
Yes.
Interesting things.
Yes, many interesting things.
George of the Jungle. It aired in my area on Sunday mornings.
Yeah, I think it was reruns when it was doing that. But
algebra, geometry, trigonometry, physics.
Along with the lion-hearted lioness, or something like that.
George of the Jungle, he had Sugar Bear. No, that's Thundercats.
Sugar Bear.
Yeah.
No, George of the Jungle had a big name.
Ursula and who else?
Ursula and an ape named Dave.
No, there was another girl, Ursula and somebody else.
Ursula? It rhymed with Ursula.
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, Mursula.
Yeah, the twins. Mursula and Ursula.
Well, of course. Why wouldn't
it
be?
I mean, of course not.
Oh, my.
How silly of us.
There's a dream date with twins, Ursula and Mursula. Yeah.
You have a weird notion of dream date. There we go.
George,
the jungle's strong as he can be.
There you go.
Watch out for that.
George of the Jungle lives a life that's free. Watch out for that tree. When he gets in the street, makes his escape with the help of his friend, a deep, deep, deep. Then away he'll schlep on a delicate ship, while Bella and Ursula stay in step. With George of the Jungle, friend to you and me. Watch out for that tree. Watch out for that.
jungle friend to you and me.
So much slapstick in a cartoon.
Yep.
Indeed.
Good stuff.
Yep, and what a great use of the kettle drums, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Bravo to a very underused instrument.
It is. It is.
Babalu, let's move on over to part two of Ordeal by Fire from CBS Radio Mystery Theater. We'll be back.
Have you ever noticed how much atmosphere plays a part in our lives? For example, it would never occur to anyone to hold a seance in a subway. And although the Promethean Society did not feature ghostly voices and trumpets and tambourines, its inner room or shrine was austere and impressive with straight-backed chairs and organ music setting the proper atmosphere. The only light came from two flaming braziers on either wall. Promos, resplendent in a white and gold robe, stood at a lectern on a slightly raised stage.
Welcome, Prometheans. Just as Prometheus brought man the gift of fire centuries ago, so are we dedicated to remind man that his salvation lies not in unbridled freedom and corruption, but in shoring up the wavering standards of morality and truth. Tonight, we extend a welcome to Brian Casey, a man who has indicated his desire to join with us, and who, after he has passed our scrutiny and been accepted, will undergo the rites of purification with which you are all familiar. You have a question, Mr. Johnson?
I do. As everybody here knows, I'm a businessman. And like everyone here, I joined the society with very high hopes.
Yes, Mr. Johnson.
Well, put it bluntly, hopes haven't been realized.
Could you be more specific?
Well, we all know it takes money to mount a campaign of the proportions you outlined to us, and we all contributed at the onset. Now, some of us have made further and exceedingly generous contributions, and I still haven't seen anything that in a business sense would justify these outlays.
You are asking for an accounting.
I'm asking for some sort of indication that something's being done.
You ask for a sign, a hopeful sign, which you expect to find on the page of a ledger. And you shall have it. Deucalion, bring Mr. Johnson the ledger.
No, I didn't mean to imply that...
Hand it to him, Deucalion.
Look, Promos, I didn't mean to upset you. I only asked, as any businessman would ask, to get some idea of where the money...
Take it.
Well, now, look, this is ridiculous. Do you want me to look at it now?
Yes, take the ledger. And now, Prometheus, O firebringer... Give our friend a sign. A sign, O fire bringer. A sign.
The ledger's on fire.
Drop it, Johnson. Drop it.
Fear not. Fear not. We are all safe. None of us has transgressed. I now call upon Prometheus for another sign. A sign directly for me.
Watch now, Casey. Watch. You see, Casey? The man's a sheet of flame. He should be burned alive. But he'll emerge unharmed when the flames die down. It's a miracle, Casey.
It's impressive. But I don't believe in miracles.
Well, Casey, what did you think of the meeting?
I can shake you up pretty good. I'll tell you more when we get into the car and start home.
Mr. Marcus?
Yes, Promos?
Haven't you forgotten something?
You mean...
Your contribution. The society has been counting on it.
Of course. You understand that I've had some difficulty in...
You've had plenty of time.
I know. But I can't...
Have you changed your mind about making the contribution?
Oh, no, not at all. I was just waiting for Mr. Casey here.
Mr. Casey informed me of his wish to contribute. But I must ask you, Mr. Marcus, in front of Mr. Casey here, are you completely familiar with his background?
Why, yes, I think so.
Now, what are you getting at, Promos?
You're not yet a member. We cannot accept outside contributions.
Well, what's that got to do with my background?
Your background will determine whether or not we accept you.
That's fair enough. If you accept me, you can take my $500,000. If not, it's up to Marcus to make the total $1 million contribution.
Yes, yes, I will.
When can I expect to hear about my application?
I should say within the next 48 hours. Yes, definitely within that time.
Well, now that we're back home, Casey, what do you think?
Phony as a $4 bill.
Well, what do we do?
Blow the whistle, Bob. Go to the DA. Raid the joint. I guarantee you, you'll find all sorts of gimmicks that produce the fire Promos uses. You're being blackmailed. You don't want to give the Promethean Society $1 million, do you?
No.
Yeah, but you're afraid that if you don't...
Stop right there. Now, you saw what happened to Timmy Burns. That's what I'm afraid of. You have any explanation as to how Timmy's feet were so badly burned?
Not at the moment. I thought I did when we were made to bathe our feet in water at the purification rites, but my theory was wrong.
What did you think it was?
I thought, Bob, there might be some delayed-action chemical in the water which might have caused the burns. But I checked my feet after I got home. Nothing. Just plain water.
Well, what's the next move, then?
Now, before we talk about any next moves, I need a straight answer to two questions. One, can either of you guarantee that nothing's going to happen to me? Two, if we call in the police, can they give me the same guarantee?
The answer to both questions must be no.
Casey, thank you for your trouble. I'll send you a check. It's been nice to meet you. Goodbye.
Now, wait a minute, Vern. You haven't heard...
I've heard all I need to. It's not your skin that's in danger of being charred. Neither of you have anything to risk. I've made my decision. I'm going to pay.
Casey Associates.
Ah, Mr. Casey. How fortunate I reached you so promptly.
Who is this?
You don't recognize the voice?
Promos?
Exactly. I don't suppose I have to spell out our decision on your application.
I don't understand.
Oh, come now, Mr. Casey. The little game is over. Since I've called you at your office, you must realize I know you're a private investigator.
So?
Well, surely you don't expect the Promethean Society to...
I'm a private investigator. Now, does that make me a second-class citizen? If you've done any checking at all, you found out that I was in Vietnam and that the rest of what I told you is true.
Now, please don't excite yourself, Mr. Casey. The private investigators are, by nature and profession, skeptics. Now, philosophically, you can't possibly be attuned to our lifestyle. Therefore, it's my irrevocable decision to refuse you membership. I called because I wanted to tell you this personally.
Okay. It's your candy store.
Not entirely, Mr. Casey. Although my instincts tell me you don't accept it, there is a god involved. Do you remember Prometheus?
Look, the Promos.
I would like to hire you, Mr. Casey.
What?
You do undertake assignments that are of a protective nature?
Yes, but I...
It would be to our mutual advantage if you would. I have reason to believe that my life may be in danger.
Are you willing to work for me?
You'll be wasting your money.
It's my money.
Well, I'll think about it.
Now, while you're thinking, consider the fact that if you were really serious about wishing to join us, you might be doing me an even larger service by keeping me alive so that the work of the society can go on.
It's a good point. As I said, I'll think about it.
Good, Mr. Casey. But don't think too long.
I'll
I'll tell you, Mr. Marcus, he's getting nervous. Otherwise, he'd never have tried to hire me.
Maybe it's true.
No way. Promos needs protection as much as an intercontinental ballistics missile.
You agree with me, Bob?
Well, it looks that way.
Well, I don't see how it changes my situation.
I still have 24 hours to pay.
Correct. But if he's running scared, and it looks like he is, then he's got something to be scared about. Look, he's very big on Greek mythology with all this Prometheus stuff, but he's got to have an Achilles heel somewhere, and he's afraid we might find it.
Excuse me. Hello?
Good evening, Mr. Marcus. I'm not taking you away from anything, am I?
Oh, nothing important.
Fine. I called to ask if you were aware that the guest you brought the other night was a private investigator.
You mean Brian Casey?
Yes.
Well, does that disturb you?
Somewhat. A man of his type is hardly Promethean Society material.
I'm sorry if I made an error in judgment.
It doesn't matter. I've just called to tell you that Casey will not become a member, and therefore you are responsible for the entire $1 million contribution. You understand?
Yes. Yes, I understand.
My feet! Oh, my feet! They're burning!
What?
Get something! Water! I have something!
Burn!
Oh, I'm burning!
In the kitchen! Pale!
Are you talking to me, Mr. Marcus?
I'm sorry. There's some trouble here.
Oh, I'm sorry, but...
You'll have the money tomorrow night. Goodbye.
Call a doctor. Help me.
Don't throw your feet under your body.
There's a pail, Ice.
Get your feet in here, quick. Merciful Lord in heaven. Look at the water, Bob.
Boiling.
Can turn a pail of ice water into a bubbling cauldron? Promos would say it's Promethean fire. What would you say? What would you do if you were in Vernon Marcus' shoes? We'll be back shortly with Act 3.
To get the very best.
Yeah.
When you say buzz, you tell the world you know what makes it all the way. When you say buzz, you say you care enough to only want the king of beer.
Bush, St. Louis. For years, the Blue Luster people could have introduced a spray can carpet cleaner. They could have, but they didn't. Hi, Frank Lieber here for True Value Hardware Stores. Blue Luster knew it would be like any other aerosol carpet cleaner, and they've always maintained that the best and most economical way to clean carpeting was with an electric shampooer. They still think so. The second best way, they admit, is with the new Blue Luster aerosol. Available from your nearby True Value Hardware store. The new Blue Luster aerosol is great for spot cleaning and for fast cleaning of large areas. But it's not just another aerosol. It's as close to liquid Blue Luster as an aerosol formula permits. It removes dirt to help restore the original color of the carpet and to make it soft and fluffy again. So for the best, most economical, and efficient way to clean carpeting, use Blue Luster liquid and an electric shampooer. But for spot cleaning or quick cleaning of larger areas, use new Blue Luster aerosol. You'll find it at the True Value Hardware store near your home.
Yeah, nothing better than a funky, funky, funky Budweiser commercial.
To your mama.
Yes. Get down with that bad music.
Yeah, I'm not sure. That's not quite the Philadelphia sound, but pretty close to it.
Oh, yes. Funky disco man bag.
I love your comments, CW. There goes the ozone, but the carpet is clean. I like that.
Yes. It's just what's important, you know? If the carpet's clean,
priorities.
All is well.
Yes. Yes.
Absolutely.
You know, forget that radiation business. Look at my sparkling carpet. So clean.
Ouch.
So this story's taking a bit of a turn here.
Yeah. Guy of feet on fire, bubbling cold water.
Interesting. Who is this grifter?
Prometheus.
Extraordinaire.
Prometheus, yes.
Prometheus.
Yes.
In history on Prometheus, Prometheus was a titan, not a god, of the Greek mythology class. He helped the young Greek gods defeat the other titans. But when he gave humanity fire, Zeus, in his rage, chained him to a rock and had a vulture or an eagle rip out his liver every day. But him being immortal, it didn't kill him. Until finally, Zeus's son, Hercules, freed him. The benefits of a classical education.
Yeah, right.
I love it.
After that, Prometheus went on to open a liver and onions restaurant, and it was amazing.
I like my liver. I like my liver and onions without liver and onions. That's how I like mine.
Jeez.
Is that impossible meat liver?
Well, and they're alluding to the fact that Prometheus gave man fire. I was looking for some reference of him giving life, because the subtitle of the original Frankenstein story by Mary Shelley is The Modern Prometheus, as in the giving of life. So I wonder if there's more to the mythos, maybe. I don't know.
Not really, because they're referring to, even in the book, Dr. Frankenstein uses lightning, fire. So that's, I think, if I remember correctly, that is why it's called Modern Prometheus. And also because the monster is immortal.
There's not going to be a quiz on this at the end of the show, is there?
Yes.
Because I'm not taking notes. I'm not taking notes.
Class,
it's no fair.
Close your books. Number
only
eight,
about liver and
ten.
Onions.
Oh, great. The substitute. Hey, I like our substitute teacher, guys.
Oh, thank you.
Better than the regular.
Don't get out the ruler, Mr. K. Smack.
Ow. Ow. Again. All right, let's wrap up Ordeal by Fire from CBS Radio Mystery Theater and find out how this turns out.
If any human could control fire, he could easily rule the world. Unless this power was granted to him by Prometheus and could only be used when Prometheus gave his permission and blessing. That is the claim of Promos, the head of the Promethean Society. We return to our story to find Brian Casey in a wheelchair with his feet badly scarred and burning for revenge.
Hello?
Bob?
Casey, where are you?
I'm at my office.
But your feet...
I'm in a wheelchair. Now, they tell me I'll be back walking in less than 3 months. You've got to do me a favor.
Of course.
When's the next meeting of the Promethean Society?
Now, look, Casey, I don't want to interfere, but don't you think you ought to lay off now?
Tell me. Then I'll ask you the favor.
The next meeting is this Friday night.
Did Marcus pay the million?
He's handing it over tonight.
Where?
Well, I don't know, but...
Listen closely. I want you to persuade Marcus to invite Promos to a big shindig at his house tonight.
I don't know whether...
It shouldn't be too hard, but it's vital. Now, why wouldn't a guy come to a party to pick up $1 million?
Casey, you ought to know better than anyone that Promos...
We both know he likes money. Marcus can say that he wants to make a big publicity deal out of the party. There'll be a lot of tycoons there. It'll be an opportunity for Promos to meet them. Some of them should be interested in the Promethean Society. And think of the impression it'll make when Marcus hands over the million.
Well, it's a point.
It'll work. And think of the impression Promos will make when he shows up in his robes.
Why would he wear the ceremonial robes?
Because they're impressive. Because he's a ham at heart. And because he has to for my plan to work.
Your plan? What plan?
It's better that you don't know, in case something goes wrong.
But, Casey, you're asking to use Vern's house, and...
I give you my word Vern can't get into trouble. Now, you've got to make the shindig come off.
Why? What's so important about Promos coming to a party?
Because after he gets there, you're going to spill a glass of whiskey over those ceremonial robes.
Seconds to state your name and business after you hear the beep.
This is Casey. I need you for two jobs at the same place. Now, we never play games, Whitey. This one's rough. It can go all the way. But it's important to me. Now, I'd have come personally to talk to you, but I'm in a wheelchair. I need you, Whitey. Well, I hope you have good news for me, Bob.
I did what you wanted.
Promos is coming?
Yes. It was easier than I thought.
How'd you bring him around?
I told him we owed you a favor.
If this works, you'll be doing yourself a favor.
Look, you were kidding about me spilling a drink over Promos, weren't you?
I've never been more serious in my life. If you don't do that, there's no point to the party.
Well, what in the world is...
Be clumsy. A little bump, and there goes the drink all over his robes. Now, you're terribly apologetic. Insist on having them clean for him. You can improvise the routine.
Yeah, I guess. You still want me flying blind, huh?
Until Thursday. There's a second part to this operation that has to come off before we stand a prayer. I'll see you back here Thursday at 4.
Bob?
Hmm?
There's something very strange about this party.
Nonsense, darling. I'm having a ball.
Well, who is this Promos?
Oh, he's quite a guy.
Does he have anything to
there
do with...
There you are, darling, enjoying the party.
Oh, excuse me, Ben. Hey, Ben, do you want a drink?
No, thank you, and you don't need another either.
Honey, we're not married yet.
Dad?
Yes?
I want to talk to you about this party.
Later, dear, after it's over.
Where did you meet this man, Promos?
Now, please, this isn't the time to...
Well, he's the one who's been giving you the trouble, isn't he?
I've told you, Avi, this is the wrong time for me to explain.
You'll tell me later?
If I can.
Ava, darling, you don't know what you're missing. This bartender really knows how to mix a drink.
Why would Dad give this man $1 million?
Probably because he believes in the Promethean Society.
Ridiculous.
Don't say that until you've met Promos. He's impressive.
He's a creep.
Come on, let's go over. I'll introduce you. You may change your mind. Promos.
Ah, Mr. Steele. And this, I take it, is your bride-to-be.
That's right. Ava Marcus.
Delighted. And congratulations to you, Mr. Steele.
Thank you. Oh, you're not drinking?
Only wine. Excuse me now.
Oh, please don't go yet, Promos. We haven't really had a chance to talk.
Watch out, Bob. You're glad.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
You clumsy fool.
Bob, you spilled your drink.
Oh, I'm terribly sorry. I don't know how that happened. Somebody must have pushed my arm.
You did. Pushing it up to your mouth.
Well, I'll have your robe cleaned, of course.
No. No, thank you.
Oh, I insist.
It was an accident. There's no need to make a case out of it.
It was my clumsiness. I'll have it cleaned and sent over to Society Headquarters.
I wouldn't think of it. Now, no offense, Mr. Steele, but this is a ceremonial robe, and I'll see to the cleaning myself.
Right on time, Bob. Come on, sit down.
How are you feeling?
Coming along. You managed to spill the drink over the robe?
Yes.
How did he react?
Well, he blew up, naturally. I offered to have the robe cleaned.
And he wouldn't allow it, huh?
How did you know?
Because he's not about to let that robe out of his hands.
You think he's gimmicked the robe?
I think I figured the answer to a lot of his tricks. You remember the ledger that burned up in Johnson's hands?
Sure.
Provost has definitely had experience with chemicals and combustibles. He's come up with some special ways to use them. Now, that ledger was treated with an unusual substance that would ignite when touched with the heat of a human hand.
Yes, but the guy who brought it to him, Deucalion or something.
It was wearing gloves.
Are you sure?
Well, I'm sure about the gloves. The rest is an educated guess. I learned a lot about chemicals in Vietnam.
Well, how does the robe come into it?
I just finished looking over Promo's ceremonial robe.
How'd you get it?
Remember Whitey Phillips?
Where did you find Whitey?
He's got a locksmith business.
I can't believe it. Forgive me for laughing, but that slick crook, a locksmith, is just too much.
Well, it's a perfect business for Whitey. Now, he was here 10 minutes ago. He brought me Promo's ceremonial robe.
You've got to be kidding. Whitey stole it?
No, not the robe you stained. I told him to lift the clean one.
Wait a minute. How did you know there was another one?
Well, there'd have to be two robes in case one went out of commission.
Uh-huh. And what did you discover when you examined the robe?
What I suspected. It was treated with some kind of flame retardant.
Well, would that protect his face? I mean, Vern told me he doesn't wear a mask or anything like that.
I know. I've wondered about that, too. Now, those flames leap all over. Now, if he had something that blew strong enough to keep the flames from his face, well...
That's pretty risky, isn't it?
He's playing for big stakes.
Casey, you're obviously convinced that the man is a phony.
Don't tell me he's got you believing that Prometheus stuff, too.
I can't figure him. Look, he wanted to hire you to protect him.
All part of the game. He had to get me out to his place so he could fix my shoes.
What?
The fire that burned me started in my shoes, not in my feet. He made me take my shoes off before I went into his office. Then he must have had the shoe treated with phosphor or some other of these chemicals that ignite under heat. Well, you know, like he did with the ledger. The heat of my body touched off the shoes.
That's the same thing he did to Timmy Burns.
I think so.
Well, what are you going to do?
Fight fire with fire? I managed to remove the fire retardant substance from the robe Whitey brought me. I treated it with some chemicals that really like fire. I fixed it so that Prometheus will really have a chance to bring the gift of fire to Promos. Whitey made it.
Are you sure?
Why shouldn't I be?
Byrne just heard that tonight's meeting has been called off.
Any reason given?
No.
Another date set?
Indefinitely postponed. Now, do you think maybe Promos suspects something?
No, we've got to trust Whitey.
Why would Promos call off the meeting?
Well, maybe he's packing in the entire operation. With Marcus Million, he may figure he's had it.
Now, that leaves us up the creek.
Only one option. We have got to get that meeting rescheduled.
The Promethean Society.
Promos?
Speaking.
This is Bob Steele. Look, I don't know whether you even want to talk to me because of the way I behaved at the party.
Accidents can happen, Mr. Steele.
Well, I called because I heard that tonight's meeting had been called off.
Yes?
And no date had been set for another?
Now, that is correct.
Oh. Well, I guess that's that, then.
Mr. Steele, would you mind telling me what you're obviously trying to tell me?
Well, it probably wouldn't mean much to you anyway. It was only a small contribution.
Contribution? From whom?
From a group that I represent. You probably don't know them, but we're setting up an import-export business with China, and I talked to them about the society and you, and of course I could only tell them what Byrne had told me, but they were very impressed.
And what has all this got to do with tonight's meeting?
Well, it was kind of a wild idea to start...
Without meaning any offense, Mr. Steele, I find it extremely difficult to follow what you're saying.
Well, I apologize. I guess it's because of that spilled drink. I still feel embarrassed. I think I ought to just forget the whole thing and return the briefcase with their money.
I think it would be a lot better and clear up a confusing situation if you came here and told me just what you have in mind.
I'm sorry I took so much of your time, Promos, but I'm sure you understand how my group feels. I'll just take the $50,000 back and explain to them that I couldn't witness a demonstration.
You are always apologizing for the wrong things, Mr. Steele. First you spill your drink on me. Now you say you're sorry for taking my time when I asked you to come here. But you don't apologize for putting me in the position of a cheap magician putting on a magic show for money.
I never intended anything.
Now what did you intend? Just what did you tell these business associates? That I was some kind of sideshow freak who could become a fire swallower for a fee?
What's the name of this game you want me to play?
I'm terribly sorry.
You're sorry? You've not only insulted me, but Prometheus.
Well, I guess there's nothing for me to say.
Oh, yes, there is. I'll give you something to say. Go back to your associates and your father-in-law and tell them they can come tonight and see Promos and the Promethean Fire.
I don't like it. What's going to happen?
At this point, I don't know.
Well, what did Casey say when you told him how Promos reacted?
Good evening. I will extend no welcome to those of you who have come tonight, not because you believe in a cause, but out of curiosity.
I don't like this, Bob.
Tonight, will you have the courage to face Prometheus, as I do? Oh, Prometheus, bring me your gift, your gracious gift of the purifying fire.
Those who live by the sword die by the sword. The man who called himself Promos, who lived by fire, died by fire. A flaming, horrible death. A warning to whom? To criminals, and perhaps a warning from Prometheus not to misuse the gift he brought mankind. I'll be back shortly.
Who knows how to help you solve your shopping problems? Your Better Business Bureau knows.
I'm going to rent this apartment, but now the landlord wants a deposit equal to 2 months' rent to cover damage. I wonder if there's anything I should do to protect myself.
There certainly is, Mac.
Who are you?
I'm the man from the Better Business Bureau. You know, deposits are usual, but before you move into that apartment, go through it thoroughly and list any and all damage. Now prepare this list in duplicate and have your landlord sign both copies. And before you sign that lease, find out what sort of repairs you will be responsible for and which will be paid by the landlord.
Then when you move, this list helps to solve the mystery of who's to pay for what, right?
Right.
If you're chilly, how about pulling up closer to our roaring fire? On second thought, after tonight's tale, that might make you a trifle uncomfortable. I'm sure that, like most people, you would like to do something about making people more conscious of the values to be found in human decency and honesty. May I offer one word of advice? If someone asks you to join a society for this purpose, think twice. Our cast included Julie Newmar, Mandel Kramer, Earl Hammond, Guy Sorrell, and Sidney Walker. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. Now, a preview of our next tale.
I'm just an old man. A very old man.
Why? Well, I took it for granted, the way you spoke.
My son-in-law is a doctor. Mandarin Gottlieb. I live with him and my daughter, Bertha.
Oh, then you know something. You've learned things from him.
No, I know nothing. Only what I see, what I feel. Did I harm her?
No, I even think she's a little better. Her eyes, they look brighter. Not so full of pain. You did nothing but touch her. Stroke her a little and talk to her. Let me look at your hands. Just hands.
What should they be?
Well, your hands are warm. On a night like this, more than warm. Hot. Very hot, as though they were burning from inside.
Radio Mystery Theater was sponsored in part by Anheuser-Busch Incorporated, brewers of Budweiser. This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time, pleasant dreams.
Macabre. Everyone knows it's macabre. You know? We're back. At least one of us is.
There I am. You know what helps when you take the microphone off mute?
Always helpful to have the microphone turned on. It's also helpful to have your soundbite handy.
Yes.
Eerie House Radio proudly presents Gar's Moral of the Story. Get our screams ready.
Unless you've got asbestos fingers, don't play with matches.
That's better than the one I had in mind. That's better than the one I had in mind.
I think mine too. I actually had one in mind myself, but I'll refrain.
Well, I think we need a series of these, Dale. A series of morals
ahead.
Tonight.
Let it rip. Wait.
Okay, hold on here.
No, the moral. Moral music. Get that moral music up there.
You mean another moral?
We have two more morals. You go
two
first.
Two more morals.
Yep, CW's going first.
We're being immoral.
Wow.
Yeah,
Eerie House Radio proudly presents CW's Moral of the Story.
Never bring a match to a flamethrower fight.
Now I'm ashamed of mine, but go ahead and do it anyway, Dale.
I'm in scroll hell. Eerie House Radio confusingly presents Dave's Moral of the Story.
If somebody's going to hold your feet to the fire, remember to keep jumping. There you go.
And there you have a trimoral event.
I might as well. Eerie House Radio has no idea why we present Dale's Moral of the Story. Look both ways before you cross the street, you stupid kid. Hey, we got a bonus feature tonight, too. Yep.
Do we?
Yeah, 5-minute mystery.
Ooh.
A 5-minute mystery, which has an extremely similar title to our CBS Radio Mystery Theater presentation.
Woo-hoo.
With the same meaning. Ordeal by Fire was the CBS Radio Mystery Theater. Our 5-minute mystery, Trial by Fire.
Ooh.
Hey, we haven't had one of these in a while. Tell the folks a little bit about this series.
You know what? I'd have to look it up, Dave. But there were a lot of old radio people that did these. I do remember hearing several with the even Frank Lovejoy in them. So I have to look back and get a little bit more on this. Well, maybe I can dig that up while we play this particular episode.
Sure.
The
they
first
will be
thing
back.
On my notes is it lasts 5 minutes.
That would appear so. This one we got a little cheesed off here with 4 minutes and 53 seconds. Here's Trial by Fire. We'll be back.
Another 5 minute mystery. Showers this evening.
Why do you bother with that radio writing? There's never anything new.
What else is there to do around a firehouse, Eden?
Sleep and go to fires.
We'll be going to enough fires, all right, if they don't catch that arsonist who's been trying to burn up the whole city.
Yeah, I'd like to get my hands on that devil.
Maybe we will, Eden. Maybe we will.
Holy smoke, here we go again.
That baby burns.
Looks like the end of the world, doesn't it?
They don't get their bloodhounds after that firebug. It soon will be.
Hey, who's that guy the chief's dragging along here?
I don't know, but he's really got a grip on his arm.
Maybe it's the firebug.
Hey, chief, who's the man you're holding?
The rat who's been setting all these fires.
Where are you taking him?
Down to the station. Put out this blaze and hurry along.
You hear that, Wrighton? Pour on the water. I want to see a firebug get singed.
You still deny that you set that fire?
Let me call my lawyer. You can't question me this way. It's illegal.
Let me go to work on him, Chief.
That won't be necessary, Edens. I'm sure this prolific arsonist will come clean in just a few minutes.
You got no proof?
You were seen running out of the burning building just as the engines pulled up. How did the fire start?
Listen, pal, I tell you, I don't know. Now will you let me go?
Why did you wait till the fire had gained so much headway before you finally ran out?
I just woke up and I heard your sirens drawing near the building.
Listen, my friend. We're out to break this cycle of arson that's been slowly destroying the city. You're in for some pretty rough weather ahead unless you come clean and tell me how that fire started. The sooner you give me the truth, the easier it'll go with you.
All right, Chief, I'll play ball with you. The whole fire was an accident.
What?
Yeah, I swear it was. I really went in there to get some sleep. And when I woke up, I lit a cigarette, and that was my big mistake. The building was so old, it was almost falling apart, and there were cobwebs hanging all over the place. While I was shaking out the flame of the match, it hit some of the cobwebs hanging from the low beams, and that was it. Webs caught fire and spread to the roof, and the dry wood began to burn in a flash.
What are we doing now, Chief?
Take him to the police and book him on a charge of arson. His story shows that he deliberately set that fire.
What lie in the firebug story did the chief detect? In just a moment, we'll know, but first...
What are you talking about, Chief? I told you it was an accident.
If it was, you would have told a different story. You see, there was one very important flaw in your story that condemned it as a lie.
Prove it.
You said that the cobwebs caught fire and spread to the roof. Well, I'm afraid that isn't quite accurate. Unfortunately for you, cobwebs don't flame. All right, boys, take him away. Our firebug needs cooling off.
Thank you.
Okay, yeah, 5 Minute Messages was a radio show between 1947 and 1950. I did hear, I'm pretty sure I heard Frank Lovejoy in this one. They were, it was a 5 Minute show presented as filler between other shows. As the title suggests, the whole show was done. What?
Oh, I was just going to say, 5 Minute Mystery with about 3 minutes of organ music.
Yeah. That's a sell advertising time, yeah. The whole show was done in just 5 minutes. The concept was a simple one, but very effective. First part was setting up the scene, showing a few characters that took part. And at the end, after about 2 to 3 minutes, the detective that was taking part in the scene was giving his solution. And then there was a break in which the audience could have tried to solve for themselves with that organ music going on. And what was the best solution for the case, during which the main theme was played over and over again for about a minute. The last part was an explanation given by the detective that led him to the conclusion. And what led him to the conclusion? That he gave before the break. Very similar to the old Ellery Queen Minute Mysteries. So, very much like that. Except they didn't have Ellery Queen.
No. They were in Ellery Queenless.
That's right. Be careful of those Queenless shows. Yep. Well, we still have some feature time here, Dale.
That we do. Where is it? What did you name
but
it?
But before we get to that, we did something special for CW, right? No?
Me?
Yes?
What?
Mm? We uploaded the Howie Scream. Yep.
Now, where the hell is it?
Well, I'll hit the button for this one. Here we go. Here it comes.
And do you know what else that scream? Does it? Now think on that scream very carefully. What does it sound like?
A guy being wrestling off of a cliff.
No. Yeah, that's
okay.
One thing, but hey, play it again if you'd be so kind.
Okay, well, let's do it again here. Here it comes. Come on, let's do it right.
Yeah! It almost sounds like a TIE fighter.
That's it.
What's that?
You said it. TIE fighter.
There's a TIE fighter?
That's part of where they got the sound from. They mixed it, but that's part of where the TIE fighter came from.
I'll be darned.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. I just thought it was a clip from Jurassic Park or something, you know?
Oh, like that sounds a hell of a lot like a TIE fighter, but no, it couldn't be.
Oh, yes, it could. Search your memories. You know this to be true.
Help!
Somebody
help!
Well programmed. Yes. Thank the maker. He has us all well programmed.
Indeed.
But thank you for the holly.
There you go. Well, you're the one that brought to our attention, so we had to finish off the sharing of your great knowledge there.
There it is.
Thank you so much. My superior
finally.
Should never let me find that. I'm like a child.
I'm deleting now. It was all a bad dream, Dale. It was all a bad dream.
Yes. Yes. It was all a bad dream.
I want to hear the goat.
There you go.
Yeah!
I think that beats the goat.
Gar is probably getting his face on because I don't hear him too well.
Yeah.
He's still in the studio, but he's rapidly applying a face. for Horrible Waters starring Gerda Gould in about 10 minutes.
The silent sounds of latex being stretched and pulled and hither yon and et cetera and things I just don't care to think about right now.
Yeah. Once again, going back to the college days.
Hey, Dale, I got a wooden nickel. I got paid this week. I have a wooden nickel for the jukebox.
You would.
You'd like to reach
away
over and slide away for that. Well, scroll back.
Have you noticed that familiar red cooler in more and more places lately? Its frosty interior bulging with refreshing Coca-Cola? Yes, these days you can find an ice-cold Coke not only at your favorite lunchroom soda fountain and refreshment stand, but in your service station and your food store, too. Since it's so easy to pause for a Coke, and the price is still 5 cents, why not ride refreshed and shop refreshed?
Being Halloween, folks, we'd like to present ourselves at your door right now, dressed up like one of those ritzy, big, polite orchestras with a soup and fish arrangement of My Old Flame. It features Paul Judson and Paul Frees. Look, folks, easy. No hands.
My old flame, I can't even think of her name, but it's funny now and then how my thoughts go flashing back again to my old flame, my old flame, my new lovers all seem so tame, for I haven't met a girl so magnificent or elegant as my old flame. I've met so many who had fascinating ways, a fascinating gaze in their eyes. Some who took me up to the sky, but their attempts at love were only imitations of my old flame. I can't even think of a name, but I'll never be the same until I discover what became of my old
think of her name. I'll have to look through my collection of human heads. But it's funny now and then how my thoughts go flashing back again to my old flame. My old flame. My new lovers all seem so tame. They won't even let me strangle them. For I haven't met a girl so magnificent or elegant as my old flame. I've met so many who had fascinating ways, a fascinating gaze in their eyes. I saw this eye, so I removed the other eye. That eye that kept winking and blinking at other men. It was making me. Some who took me up to the skies, for their attempts at love were only imitations of my old flame. I can't even think of her name. What was her name? It is Doris, Laura, Chloe, Emily, Mo, Jack. No, it couldn't have been Mo. I can't stand it, I tell you. This is driving me sane. I'm going to... She would always treat me mad. So I poured a can of gasoline and struck a match to my old flame.
Here we go. Paul Frees doing his very best. Peter Lorre.
Yeah, very good. So, Dale, what's happening on Erie House next week?
Let's see. If we keep the bills paid, we're going into the future, man. That's right. With X-1, Suspense, and a show. This could be a first. Is this the first time, Dave, or... For
it is.
Crisis? Ooh.
Yes, it is. I just
Crisis.
I used to listen to these when I was working nights at the paint shop, and I just found a bunch of them, so we're going to be sneaking some of these in.
You sure you weren't inhaling the paint fumes? It was.
That would have been more likely
I mean,
me. Yep. And then next Saturday, we got another CBS Radio Mystery Theater. Through the Looking Glass.
Standing.
Ooh.
And if you want to know what it's about, go ask Alice.
I think she'll know.
That's right, see? Yep. Great when they just jump.
Sounds like an exciting week next week.
It will be.
Absolutely. So bring your TARDIS, warm it up.
Yep, we hope we kept you warm with these fiery fantasy fables.
Yes. If not, just light another match.
Especially this time of year, we could use a little extra warmth.
Yeah.
Most assuredly.
Without having to burn the furniture or whatever.
There you go. Fogs. Putting out the fire with gasoline.
Oh, there you go. A little David Bowie classic.
Outstanding. And put out the fire, gasoline, I don't know, maybe a bottle of scotch, that's cheaper than gasoline.
Yeah, but in reality, you only feel warmer for a minute, but in reality, you actually lower your temperature quite significantly. Drinking alcohol in extremely cold weather, not good idea, not good.
I meant to put on the fire, not to imbibe. Icky.
Well, that's fun.
You mean there's other purposes for alcohol? What? No.
Shock, shock, shock.
That's right. You can rub with it, and you can cook in it. And,
cook in it.
That's it. And drink.
And you can join us next Friday at 8:30 Eastern right here. On Erie House, oldie timey radio. On behalf of CW, Dave, and myself, thanks and good night. And good luck in
prison. Good night.
Whatever that means.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him.
And her.
When next we meet in Frankenstone, don't come alone.
There we go.
Nope, it's out.
Yep. I just had to fill in while we went off the live there. So that was fun.
That was an interesting show, huh?
A
good story.
Yeah. The grift got the grifter good.
I'm just amazed. Again, I'm shocked with myself for all the different unusual things that I have, like comic books and other, monster movies. I did not stumble across CBS. I feel like I really missed out by not hearing them back then when they came out, you know, the CBS Radio Mystery Theater. I'm disappointed in me.
I don't know. It wasn't a retro. I mean, it's only now recently everyone's getting retro. I mean, everyone's going back. Vinyl. Vinyl records have outsold CDs of late. People are really into vinyl records again.
I still have a ton of vinyl.
I do too, yeah.
I've turned much of it over to my son, like stuff I have digitally. But there's some cool, like, Dr. Demento stuff I have, like collections. And just weird. I was telling, I don't know if you were here, CW, I was telling Dave and Gar, Freddie Blassie's name came up. I have a picture disc of Freddie Blassie singing, like, the 12-inch version of Pencil Neck Geek.
Yeah, I have a whole collection of stuff that will probably never end up on, unless I download it myself. I have a whole collection of political comedy from the 60s and 70s and on vinyl and I'm sure probably most of the old Alan Sherman have been turned over. I don't know that Bob Newhart has. I have almost all the Button Down Mind Bob Newhart albums, so I've got to.
Yes.
Now, do you have any of you mentioned political. Do you have any of the Watergate comedy stuff that came out shortly after Watergate?
I do have several. I mean, one was even called the Watergate Comedy Hour, and with Avery Shriver was in one of the guys in that.
The reason I ask is I remember the Ghoul would use as sound bites this music from because he would rip on Nixon, you know, especially after the scandal. And there was this one; it was a barbershop quartet type song. We're Haldeman, Ehrlichman, Mitchell, and Dean.
And
he lip synced it with other like crew members of the Ghoul show. It was funny that way back in the 70s.
Yeah, no. That one I don't have. A lot of the political comedy I have is actually mostly done with a live audience. It was not musical, although every once in a while there was some musical comedy there with it. But in general, it was just done in front of a live audience, like what a radio show would have been. On a wider range of different types of stuff, even up to The First Family Rides Again, which was a takeoff on the Ronald Reagan era. So I have it up to Ronald Reagan.
Nice.
And I have the first two original First Families. I have one called The First Family. It's kind of an Italian mobster version of The First Family. I've got a ton of those. Alan Robbins, where they redid things like Welcome to the LBJ Ranch, it was called. And they actually put in audio clips from press conferences when they would ask a question and answer with that particular soundbite from one of the press conferences, and with Dwight Eisenhower and LBJ and I forget who all, even to the point when Reagan and Carter were running against each other. And one side was Reagan, the other side was Carter. It was absolutely hilarious.
Yeah. Too bad they didn't have the technology back then they have now, because I understand LBJ was that, when he was not speaking publicly, was extremely foul.
he
was a real sort of a salty sort of character.
My mother would call it a potty mouth. Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Recent presidents are not the only ones who've had foul mouths. There's been some throughout history.
Yeah, they just didn't have the hot mic problem. The microphone is constantly on now.
Yep. Yeah, there's no hiding. I'm so glad I grew up in an era when they didn't have cell phones, when I was in my mischievous years.
Be perpetually on the internet, never free of it. You're never free.
Yep, that's for sure. Yeah, it's like the best revenge is YouTube. Or drunken revelries and things. Yep.
Most definitely.
We were fascinated with Fire the Kids that I played with. Not like in the firebug sense, but like just having like a safe campfire. So if you had a Zippo lighter, you were the cool kid, you know. Ooh, he's got a Zippo to light firecrackers with and stuff. I ran with some nutty kids. Does it show?
Actually, if you want to get really retro, and don't ask me why, I don't even remember why I purchased it. It came with some sort of a toolkit, a little toolkit I got for the car. It is a flint starter. It has a flint.
Oh, no kidding.
Rod. It has a little flint rod, and then the other side, a little stainless steel starter. So you take them apart and just start sparking.
That someday. You know?
Yep, zombie apocalypse. I'm ready.
Yeah, or just when there's some like huge technological crash. That's what I always say. When the next great, you know, extinction or whatever happens, I always go on this rant. I know neither of you are going to like this. But I'm going to go on anyway because I'm an ass. Us smokers, we're going to have an advantage. When we rebuild society, we have fire. So when a militant non-smoker comes up and says, can I have some of your fire? I'm going to say no, but you can have a cigarette.
Oh, great.
I'm sorry. I'm bad.
When I have my fire and a smoker comes up saying, mind if I have a light? I'm going to say, no.
Wow. Yes, you can. Your pant leg. Hot foot. That's what I was thinking in that last story. It was like a hot. They were giving him a hot foot.
Third degree burn. Hot foot. Yeah.
Yeah. Ouch.
I can't believe people actually did that to one another. Would give a hot foot.
Closest I've ever had to a hot foot is when I was at a campfire, sitting down, and I put my feet, and I was wearing boots as close to the fire as I dare, and then started seeing a little smoking coming off of there. It actually felt great for a while, but then I had to pull away and cool off, and then I back and do it again. I know, weird.
It felt great right up until the screaming agony.
Right up until the
there you go. Right up until that moment.
Right up until that moment, yes.
Other than that, it was perfect.
Yeah, great night, goat. Great day. Great goat.
Yeah!
Oh, Howie. There you are, Howie.
Well,
you know,
kids, I'm going to play.
I'm going to play with that now. I think you have to just slow it down and make it sound a little metallic, and there you go, and you've got a TIE fighter.
Yeah. It is. That's where the TIE fighter came from. That's why your memory is not messing with you. Your childhood is there. Thank George Lucas. And the sound team who found that.
That is awesome. Thank you for sharing that.
Not at all.
Fun fact.
I have no idea.
Fun fact.
The Force is with us.
Before you guys pull out the quiz from the show earlier today, I'm going to have to make my absence present here.
Yes, Dave. Try to have a good night or as best you can, brother.
I will. Thank you.
All righty. And
Can we call Mr. Durante to the stage?
I think we should.
That would be nice.
Please. Oh, Mr. Durante, can you segue us away?
Good night. It's time to say good night. What more to say but good night? We've had a few laughs, and it's time to put toodaloo. Ari, go up, we the same. Good night, folks, and good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever.